time is 7:46. Anthony Reich, a very good morning. Save us from ourselves.
I will do my best, although I think that it's past its opportunity to be saved, Howard, I have to tell you.
You mean it's too late for us?
It's gone stale.
The subject has indeed. All right, reports from Syria that Israel attacked areas in the Syrian Golan Heights overnight. What do we know about this, Anthony?
So these reports are purely Syrian reports at the moment. The IDF has yet to respond, even though we had the situation yesterday where there was this incident in Shechem, and the IDF didn't respond. And in the end, there was a response from the IDF from yesterday's story, which actually turns out that it seems as if though the IDF might have mistakenly identified somebody who they thought was a terrorist, and actually was a member of the Palestinian Security Force. So there seems to have been some sort of an error yesterday on the part of the IDF, and that was announced publicly yesterday during the day. Today, however, still no word on the supposed attack that took place at about 2 o'clock in the morning in southern Syria. We understand that missiles were fired towards that area. The Syrians were saying that they actually activated the anti-missile systems, but they're also interestingly saying that there were attempts to try to block the radar signal by scrambling methods. Scrambling was used in order to try to mix the Syrian radar system up so that the anti-aircraft and anti-missile systems would not be deployed or would be deployed incorrectly. The Syrians claim that indeed some of the missiles that were fired towards Syria were intercepted. We don't have any confirmation whether that is true or not. But they are also nonetheless saying that damage was caused. So despite the fact that they claim to have intercepted at least some of those missiles, clearly the other missiles did get through to their targets because there was damage that was reported even by the Syrian authorities. Nothing more really is known. It's not clear what the target was, why the Israelis would have chosen to focus on that particular area, which is called Tel al-Hara, which is in that southern Syria area in the Golan Heights. It is a strategically important area, being at the altitude that it is in the Golan Heights. I don't know if that was part of the reason why Israel decided now is a good time to attack. And I'm not sure that we will necessarily find out, even if the IDF does make a statement about this, although on this occasion, I suspect that the IDF will remain silent on this issue, whereas yesterday, or should they were going to say something, today I'm pretty sure that they're not. And I think that it's going to be we're just going to see this one kind of disappear under the radar as previous attacks on Syria have in the past. So the IDF really using opportunities to attack Syria. And I think most of the focus has been Iranian activity in Syria, whether it be through missile movements, missiles and weaponry that's been going to Hezbollah potentially in the Lebanese area, or Iranian armaments, Iranian infrastructure that's being established within that southern Syrian area, which potentially presents a threat to Israel. So those are just speculations on my part because I don't have any further information other than, you know, these very, very limited reports that we've received from the Syrian authorities, the Syrian official news agency.
Yeah, really good. This is not a story that is unique. We are seeing this playing out over and over again in this area. And
and I think that it's really focused on Iran more than anything else. I don't think that the Syrian regime, Syrian forces represent a threat to Israel as such. I think, you know, after this lengthy civil war that they've been involved with, I don't know that they in themselves present any sort of threat. But the real issue, of course, is the presence of Iran in Syria and the presence of Hezbollah, which is spreading its influence now from where it was limited in southern Lebanon to also include now the Syrian area. So Hezbollah together with Iran, I mean, effectively they're one and the same thing. They seem to be spreading their influence across the length of Israel's northern border, both on the Lebanese side as well as the Syrian side. And I think that that's really where the concern lies.
Moving on to the political situation in Israel, former Justice Minister Ayelet Shaked has announced that she will run in the next election, in spite of announcing only a few months ago that she would be retiring from politics. What made her change her mind?
Well, I think what made her change her mind was another opportunity to get involved, because Once she had been involved in the previous elections and had not had led this party together with Naftali Bennett that won no seats at all, I don't think she had much of a choice other than to announce that she was effectively retiring, because it kind of looked as if though, you know, she'd kind of been forced to retire in a sense. And then it was made known that she had actually accepted a job as the chairman of one of these newly developed medical marijuana companies, of which there are numerous in Israel. It's becoming a very, very big industry indeed. Mm-hmm. And I understand that Ayelet Shaked had accepted a job as the chairman of one of these companies when, lo and behold, it was announced that there would be another round of elections. And so she very, very quickly distanced herself from the job as chairman of that medical marijuana company. And she has now decided that she will indeed be running again in the election. And what she said is that she would like to lead a united list of the various small right-wing parties. Now, I don't know exactly who will be involved in that particular list and how she will get them to be united, because they seem to be very disparate and split up as it is. And the fact that she and Naftali Bennett decided to break away from the Bayat Hayudi is just a clear indication of how split that right-wing faction is. But she now seems to think that she can somehow bring these various right-wing parties together, whether it be the Yamin HaChadash, which she and Naftali Bennett set up themselves, whether it be the old Bayit HaYehudi, which have really distanced themselves from both Ayelet Shaked and Naftali Bennett, whether it be potentially other parties that are on the fringes, many of whom did not manage to win seats in the election because they were below the electoral threshold, whether she thinks that by uniting all of them together that they could potentially win, you know, a substantial number of seats. Because let's not forget that with the Yamin HaChadash, her and Naftali Bennett were on the verge of getting beyond that electoral threshold, and that would have given them four seats right away. So those four seats could have substantially changed the whole political arena in terms of how the seats were being distributed in the Knesset. And so if she feels that by uniting her party with the old Bayit HaYehudi, who, you know, also won obviously their seats, they could potentially get a block of, I don't know, potentially 10 or 12 seats on that right, which would make them a much stronger force to be reckoned with than had been the result of the past election. So I think that this is how she sees things happening, and she made that announcement yesterday that she would indeed run for the next election. For the moment, Naftali Bennett has remained silent. He has made already made an announcement that he does not intend to run in the next election, despite being given another opportunity. We're going to see what happens with the Ayelet Shaked. Of course, we also remember the fact that there were certain factions within the Likud who were courting her to join the Likud list and to bring with that voters, her electorate. But I suspect that, you know, that particular tactic wouldn't necessarily be very successful, because a lot of those people voted for her and Naftali Bennett specifically because they did not want to vote for the Likud, but still wanted to vote on the right of the political spectrum. So by her joining the Likud, I'm not sure how many of those voters would have followed her. Mm. But in any event, it seems as if that particular discourse is now finally put to rest. A lot of the Likud members of Knesset were opposed to having her come onto their list. And it seems as if they've been the winners in this, although it's not clear whether she was really interested in joining the Likud or not.
Really interesting to see how this is going to play out, and what kind of impact she will have in the next elections, considering how poorly she did in the last ones. All right, we need to talk, of course, about the Bahrain conference. A number of Arab countries have confirmed their participation in the US-led Bahrain conference, in spite of the Palestinians deciding to boycott it. Which countries are now going to participate?
Well, the latest countries that have joined up and have announced that they will be sending representatives to the summit are Egypt, Jordan, and Morocco. And this follows the fact that Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Qatar have already said, of course, along with their Bahraini hosts, that they will have representatives at this particular summit. And, of course, the U.S. government will have, you know, their own representatives there. It's not clear, to be honest, whether Israel will formally have representatives there, bearing in mind that Bahrain and Israel don't have diplomatic relations. But there has been a very much a warming of relations, a warming of ties between the two countries. And so it's going to be interesting just to see whether Israel will be formally represented at the meeting or not. But I think the fact that Egypt and Jordan particularly have said that they will send representatives is now beginning to look as if though the Palestinian Authority is very much sidelined, having already announced that they do not intend to participate. The conference is due to take place in another 2 weeks from now. So there's still quite a lot of time for people to change their minds and for there to be some arm wrestling going on in the background, which I suspect there will be, because Egypt and Jordan are very, very influential. They've been very influential in you know, brokering various peace arrangements between Israel and the Palestinian Authority, whether it be the Palestinian Authority or Hamas. The Egyptians have certainly been very involved, and the Jordanians are seen to be very influential, given that King Abdullah is the head of the Waqf, which is the head of the council that looks after and rules over the Muslim holy sites in Jerusalem. So he always enjoys some level of standing as a result of the Waqf and the fact that he heads up the Waqf. And now that these two countries plus Morocco have decided that they will participate along with the U.S. administration means, as I say, that the Palestinians are looking very much like they've forced themselves to be left out. And I think that that's going to weaken their situation, not only in terms of the American administration, but potentially even within the Arab world, where other Arab countries will be seeing them as having missed an opportunity to really take advantage of something that the Americans are trying to pursue. And even if whatever the Trump administration is going to propose is a non-starter, or even if it's not going to be successful at the end of the day, the Palestinians will always be fingered for not even having been prepared to listen to what the Americans have to say. And I think that certainly they're probably doing themselves some disfavors by having announced at such an early stage that they have no intention of participating.
Mm-hmm. And finally, Moldova has decided to relocate its embassy to Jerusalem. Is Moldova a significant player? Is it a significant decision?
Is this a thing? This is what people are asking. Who cares whether Moldova have their, you know, embassy in Jerusalem or not? No, it is certainly, I think it's an achievement. The fact is that even though Moldova is not, you know, one of the leading players on the international stage, the fact that they have made this announcement, I think from an Israeli government perspective, I think it's something which will be welcomed, obviously, by the Israeli government. Having said that, Moldova is going through its own sort of political turmoil. And if they do indeed move the embassy to Jerusalem, as has been announced by the Prime Minister, Pavel Filip, then they will become the only European country at the moment to have their embassy in Jerusalem. I don't think that that's necessarily going to open the floodgates and convince, you know, all the other European countries to do the same. But every little step forward, I think, is significant. And even countries who are not that influential on the international stage making decisions like this, I think, is just a little victory for Israel and for Israel's claim to Jerusalem as the capital. So, you know, it's important that we have countries like the United States taking decisions like this, which of course they have done already. And it's important that the smaller countries do the same to follow suit. So overall, I don't think it's a huge thing, but it's nonetheless, I think it's of some significance.
Absolutely, I do hear that. Time is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow, same time, same place. It is 8 o'clock. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem 101.9 High FM.